The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome back to the 750. I am RJ Ochoa. He is two-time Super Bowl champion Tony Casillas. You're listening to us, as always, on the Blog of the Boys podcast feed in partnership with SB Nation and Vox Media. Make sure you subscribe, whatever your podcast provider is, because we are the only podcast, basically, I think, in the whole world that has two Super Bowl rings. Tony, welcome aboard.
Yes, in our little world, yes, we are. That would be the case. I'm doing okay, I guess. Little different than when the last time we talked, last week when we did, I guess, the pregame going up to the Seattle game. And we talked about before we came on and started podcasting, there's a sense of panic in Cowboy Nation. And I kind of agree with them. This is a very important week for the Cowboys.
Yeah, so so we do something at SB Nation. You know, you and I were talking about this before we started recording, called Fan Pulse, which is what it sounds like. We gauge the pulse of fan bases, all 32 NFL fan bases, and we ask various questions to just kind of get the temperature on things. And every week we ask people to grade their confidence level in the state of the franchise. And Dallas Cowboys fans feel 6% confident in the state of the team. That's six. That's one more than the number of Super Bowls the Cowboys have.
That is, I guess that's somewhat surprising, considering this is will only be the fourth game of the season. But it's probably the expectations. I think everyone goes into the season, RJ, expecting their team to do exceptionally well. And I guess what we've seen so far, and that would be on the offensive side of the ball, people aren't feeling very good about that. This franchise desperately needs a win.
You know, we talked so much last week, as you said, when the Cowboys were heading up to Seattle. We were like, oh, defense, hot boys, sacks, Kayvon Frazier, Xavier Woods, whatever. And that's great. That's fine. That's dandy. It's all still there, and it's all still true. But this offense, it's gross. I mean, I don't know of another word. I mean, there's gross, inept, disgusting, offensive, flagrant, yuck. The Cowboys offense is, I mean, I don't think we're exaggerating when we say it's literally one of the worst in the NFL.
It's terrible. That's the only way. I mean, I try to look at different things to describe it, but right now, probably a little bit more of a disappointed, considering, again, the expectation. A lot of things that probably our expectations may have been a little bit higher, because we didn't factor in the guys that they lost. And certainly with Travis Frederick gone and Dez and Jason Witten, a couple other big-time playmakers, this offense is 31st in the National Football League. You look at Dak Prescott, he is almost dead last in yards per throw with, I believe, 4.5 yards, and that would be 31st, followed by Sam Bradford, which is 32nd. I don't really like to get into statistics, but that kind of tells you the story, the tell of the tape of this offense.
Well, and to that point, Sam Bradford, the only team in SB Nation's polls that had less confidence in the Cowboys were the Arizona Cardinals.
Wow.
Their fans are 5% confident in their team. And further to that point, Sam Bradford's been bad, and the Arizona Cardinals are making a quarterback switch this week. Steve Wilkes is going to start the rookie out of UCLA, Josh Rosen. They're obviously at a point where you got to shake something up, and the Cowboys they're at that point. I think we all agree they're there, but they're not making any changes, and I think that's where we need to start. This week, Jason Garrett, you know, I got to give him credit from a loyalty standpoint, I guess, a friendship standpoint. I'm sure Jason Garrett's good friends. All I'm saying, if somebody had to buy me a Christmas gift, I bet Jason Garrett would get me something nice because I'm sure he's a good friend. He is going down with Scott Linehan. He's not making any changes. I find that to be curious. That's the way I'll start. I find it to be very curious because I have to imagine Jason knows that you know, his seat's a little warm and he's just fine. You know, keeping things. How can you? What's the quote? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting
definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
Is that not what Jason Garrett's doing, in your opinion?
I don't know, RJ. And again, what else is he going to say? He's got to give him a vote of confidence. Right. You know, Scott Linehan has been very inconsistent and very inconsistent since he's been the play caller. So I don't, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, he's got to back his offensive coordinator and play caller. But I don't want to see this kind of trend where, you know, they played, you look at the Giants game and when you look at their season opener against Carolina, and then from what maybe, you know, one thing or the another, they listen to the noise around Scott Linehan. You know, they open their home opener versus the Giants. They get a little bit more, a lot of creativity and get guys, and then they take a step back. And then now they're faced with this huge game on Sunday. I don't want to see the inconsistency on this offense. It can't be one of these things, well, we will change because we need to change because of the philosophy and the most important thing you can't really you can't coach by is fear. Mm-hmm. Fear that you're going to lose your job and job security, because that doesn't work well for a team.
This isn't something that most people on earth can speak to, but you certainly can with your experience in the NFL, your experience with the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, you've got the hardware to show for that. And I understand times are different. You know, when you guys were doing your thing, there wasn't Twitter, or, you know, there wasn't Blogging the Boys, there wasn't all this extracurricular stuff. Now it's hard to ignore things like that. I get that.
There wasn't a smartphone. Right. Thank God. There wasn't any of those things back in the 90s. Right. And that was a good thing.
Right. It's true. Good for you guys.
No exposure. No instant exposure.
Exactly. But I mean, putting yourself back in those shoes and maybe allotting for the difference in time, how much of this, if you're on the Cowboys, if you're whoever, pick a guy, how much are you aware of? I mean, are you aware that everybody is saying this about Scott Linehan, that everybody's saying this about Jason Garrett, that everybody's saying this about the offense? I mean, how aware are you? Because I think that fans, they, you know, everybody thinks, oh, they've got to know, but maybe they don't know. That's where, you know, certainly your opinion is valuable.
That is a lie, because think about it, as you just mentioned, they have Twitter, they have Snapchat, they have instant exposure. You can look at your phone, and what guy doesn't have a Twitter handle and wants 2 million followers? Mm-hmm. So either you stick your head in the sand, or hopefully you're kind of immune to it. You got to have some thick skin. You can't worry about what other people are saying around you.
Right.
I mean, that hasn't changed. But as far as just finding out that information, and I thought, you know, to the point about the difference between our era and now, someone, I don't know where I read, maybe it was on Blogging the Boys or some other publication, maybe it was just someone making a comment about the quarterbacks that have played for the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. And their point was, Troy Aikman, during his career, he only averaged like 200 yards or 220 yards
different,
per game passing.
Different times.
It's a different era. And I thought Troy's response was very on point. He said, look, you know, it wasn't an offense. Now you have to throw the ball 300 yards and you have to rush the ball 100 yards. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the balance now. It's not 60-40 or 50-50. It's more like 65-35. So you can't compare the two eras.
Well, that's a good point, and I agree with you. I think it was back before the Buccaneers lost. People were comparing Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's what it was to Troy. And yeah, I mean, you look at it. I mean,
and how many times he threw the ball 200 yards in a game?
It's silly.
Well, how many rings does Troy Aikman have? He didn't have to.
Right.
And it's a different. It's the modern era football right now.
Yeah. By the way, in your eyes, to go off topic, is Troy a Sooner or a Bruin? You just say he's a Sooner. You just leave it at that.
Well, we actually had a bet, a UCLA game.
Oh, nice.
He was a Bruin, and we all know the story. If you don't, the story behind Troy transferring to UCLA. And you know, Jerome Brown broke his ankle, and that was probably the best injury someone's ever gotten.
Right.
Because he went on and had this great career. So it's funny you mentioned that. You know, Troy opened up a new restaurant here in the Metroplex by the stadium at Texas Live. It's called Troy's. So my wife and I went to the opening. So we're talking. He's, oh, yeah, we're going to have a little wager. So I said, yeah, we are.
Nice.
So that week before the game, I reached out to him. I think it was via social media. I don't know if you saw it. And I said, hey, Troy, how about a wager? So then he text messaged me. He says, well, how many points are you going to give me? Because the line was 30 points. I'm like, Troy, I cannot give you 30 points. I said, okay, I'll give you 30 points. Well, guess what? The Bruins only lost by 28.
Wow.
But anyway, yeah, we had a wager on that game. And unfortunately, I'll settle for a cold beer from at Troy's.
Hey, there's a lot worse punishments in life. A buddy of mine from ESPN San Antonio is heading there on Saturday night. So I know it's a poppin' place.
It's a great venue. You got to give a plug for them. They've done a fantastic job with that place.
For sure. But Troy Aikman, former Sooner. Obviously, Tony Casillas, former Sooner as well, but a real Sooner again. You know, no Bruin in your blood, so respect.
No, not whatsoever.
But to get to that point, though, to Troy's point, you know, because Troy's defense—I don't even want to say defense, but I don't want to spend too much time on that. But he's saying, look, obviously the game's different; they throw more, etc. That's the end of it. And to that point, the Cowboys' throwing prowess is broken. I mean, the one thing, and I mean, the NFL is custom tailored to throwing. I have to imagine if you got penalized the way Tyrone Crawford did last week, that you'd be just all sorts of miffed, you know, in the middle.
Don't
of
let
the
me
game.
Start my rampage.
Right.
We're previewing the Lions game.
Right.
Do not get me on the rampage of what's going on in the NFL as far as protecting the quarterback.
Sure. But they are protecting them, and even then, it's like the NFL is just. They've built this hot tub for quarterbacks to come just relaxing, and the Cowboys come in like in scuba gear, and they're like, "Oh, let's do it." I mean, they're not at all, you know, adhering to what the league is. It's like I saw a tweet the other day. It's like, you know, the NFL is to borrow from the NBA, shifting to this small ball 3-point shooting offense, and the Cowboys are like, "No, we're gonna dominate in the paint. We're gonna grind it out. We're gonna rough it out." It's like, dude. I mean, while I understand it's your philosophy, you're ignoring the advantages that the game is inherently presenting you with.
It is, and it really bothers me that where it's gotten, it's almost a point where the NFL is trying to do the best that they can to do away with the sack.
Right.
Because there's no proper way to tackle a quarterback. I saw Kevin Hart, and I think he was on the First Take, or it was on ESPN promoting his movie or whatever he's got coming out, and he was showing how a quarterback's supposed to be sacked. So it's to pick him up, lay him on the ground, and give him a pillow to lay on. That's the version of the sack in a National Football League. Because it's so subjective. It's, you know, and again, I don't want to get started on that because it's just so ridiculous how they've changed the game when it comes to rushing a quarterback. And to add to that, is quarterbacks are – and I know Troy and all these former quarterbacks, or even current quarterbacks, are laughing at it.
Right.
Like, you know what? We can't be protected that much because it changes the outcome, winning and losing.
Sure.
That's the problem.
So what do you think then about Dak Prescott? I mean, shifting away from the penalty stuff. I mean, getting to his performance now. Because he does have, like every other quarterback, all these advantages from the rule book to help him succeed, to help him – have success. I mean, he had a roughing the passer penalty calling him late in Seattle. And I think, you know, there was a little bit of acting there on Dak's behalf. That is a whole different thing. But, I mean, Dak is, and it does not help Dak's case that the Tony Romo episode of A Football Life is coming out this week. And that's going to really make people nostalgic. Dak is in, I mean, I still believe that Dak has a lot of great traits, and I think he has the ability to turn this around, but there's no denying that Dak is in the hottest water that he's ever been as the quarterback of the Cowboys.
Well, to compare him, the thing with the quarterback and the penalties now, you see with Ben Roethlisberger, you see with Ryan Fitzpatrick, we'll talk about the game on Thursday night, and those quarterbacks set in the pocket, but the difference between right now Dak Prescott and those type of quarterbacks, those quarterbacks will sit in the pocket. And they'll throw the ball, and they'll be on point, and they'll hit their man that's open.
Do you think that can do that?
That's a great question. And here, I hate to be so pessimistic, and I'm not trying to be pessimistic,
right,
but we haven't seen the evolution of that type of quarterback when it comes to Dak Prescott's DNA. I just don't see him – is a quarterback that's going to sit in the pocket like Ben, Big Ben, and all these big quarterbacks,
right?
Because he's a mobile quarterback.
Sure.
And until we really find that, and just like everyone's been saying this week, the Cowboys have yet to find any identity on offense. I mean, tell me what type of offense they're running right now. Is it, yeah, we want to run the football. And I know the season's early.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate to harp on, you know, it being so early and like, let's have this overreaction like the fan base. But right now, there is no identity within this offense whatsoever.
Yeah, I remember Dak's rookie year when he went to the Pro Bowl. I remember Drew Brees was on that Pro Bowl team, and he talked a lot about how Drew Brees was such a role model of his, obviously growing up in Louisiana. You know, when Dak was growing up, that was certainly when Drew first got there. That 06 Saints team was great, and the 09 team that won the Super Bowl. So I can understand Dak liking Drew Brees. But his, you mentioned Ben Roethlisberger. I would say that sort of the polar opposite, or maybe not the polar opposite, but what Dak is definitely not is a Drew Brees type of quarterback. There's no way he's going to sit back there in the pocket 40, 45 times a game and just dice you up. There's no way he's going to be that guy. I do think that he can be maybe not Ben Roethlisberger, but I think he could be closer to that in that he can run around, he could take some hits on the move and, you know, make some throws. I don't think he's got Ben Roethlisberger's arm or accuracy for now at the very least, but I mean, I think he's got to move. I mean, and you think about it. I mean, the NFL is trending in this RPO. You know, everybody wants a Philly special type play. Move your quarterback, play action, etc. And the Cowboys are saying, Dak, just plant your feet, bro. Just plant your feet and throw all day long when it's so obvious that that's not his strength.
Well, it's like Matt Stafford, this offense is coming here to play the Cowboys, is that they have three pretty good wide receivers. And one thing with Dallas, and you look at their offensive side of the ball, you're wondering where the playmakers are going to be on offense and as far as wide receivers. This week, is it going to be Deontay Thompson? Is it going to be Cole Beasley? Is it going to be Michael Gallup? You really don't know who is going to be that guy. And when you look at Detroit, you look at Marvin Jones, you look at Golden Tate, you look at the plethora of different receivers they have. And, you know, Matt Stafford is a tremendous quarterback. He really is. He's a warrior. But they are able to put some fear in making guys cover guys downfield. And we've said that before.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a threat. Until you say, okay, all right, I'm out here. I'm going to run vertical. I'm going to line up and run a 40-yard dash down the field, and you're going to have to catch me. No one's going to respect the Cowboys' offensive passing attack.
No, I know. I'm sure you saw NFL Network's Brian Baldinger tweeted out the video of him looking at one play from the Seattle game where it was 3rd and 9 and every Cowboys receiver just ran to the sticks. I mean, it was embarrassing. I mean, and so I think the unfortunate formula for a Cowboys game, or not formula, but what happens is the defense is going to keep you in the game for the first half while the offense fails. And that's going to happen. And you're going to go into halftime maybe up 6-0, maybe up 10-0 if you're lucky enough to score, maybe up 10-3, 10-6, something like that. And then in the third quarter, they're going to break you. In the third quarter, they're going to break you because when you come out, you're going to have this plan, and they're going to wreck it, and then your defense is going to get tired. And that's why I think the most dangerous player in this game, in this Lions game on Sunday for the Cowboys, you know, mentioned all the receivers the Lions have, but they've got a lot of great runners, too. They've got Kerryon Johnson, the rookie. They've obviously got LeGarrette Blount coming over from the Super Bowl champion Eagles. But the guy that I'm most scared of is Theo Riddick. Because Theo Riddick, when the Cowboys' defense is gassed because their offense isn't going to be able to help them, Theo Riddick's going to get in space in the fourth quarter. He's going to take a screen pass. He's going to take it like 35, 40 yards, and that's going to be the backbreaking play because they're going to be exhausted from carrying the team all day.
And Matthew Stafford, their offense is all based on let's get the ball out quick. Let's go fast. Let's go hard. If you've watched and followed Matthew Stafford's career, that's the type of quarterback he is. It's we're going to get it out as fast as we can. We're going to find a guy open, and he's got such a quick release. And to your point, exactly, because you know those guys, the Cowboys, if they could manufacture some points and where they're not playing from behind, I mean, if the way their defense is balling, if they could come out and manufacture a touchdown in the first quarter – and then maybe get 10 points in the first half and kind of hold down the fort, like, and then maybe like, sort something out in the second half.
That's what they did against the Giants. And then
right. That's got to be their mindset the OC offensive coordinator, whatever it is like, we have to really, really put emphasis on starting fast and creating some type of play where we can score some points.
I'm going to say two things. One, so I do a bingo card every week, like things that are probably going to be sent on the broadcast. It is going to be drilled into our brains just at an exhausting level that Matthew Stafford and Clayton Kershaw played Little League together in the Dallas.
Oh, area. I know. We're gonna Highland get, Park. Yeah. They went to the same high school.
We're going
to
get that all day long on Sunday. It's going to be, you know, I can just hear it now, the announcer. Did you know that Matthew Stafford? And they're going to show the photos of them when they're Little League, whatever. But so that's the first thing. But the second.
And I know you also love Rico Gathers. Did you know he was a basketball player?
Oh, man, I know. Yeah, we got Rico.
Did you know that, RJ?
Did you know
he played basketball?
I did not, Tony. You're breaking news to me. But so the other thing that I was going to say is, okay, so we agree, I think everybody agrees, that the Cowboys' strategy is to get the first punch in and then just kind of dance in the ring and just survive, you know, just survive the rest of the fight. While I think we all agree, how good of a strategy, or actually not how good, I don't even want to use the word depressing, but is it depressing that that's their only way that they can win games? I mean, is that not an indictment on the way they've built their team, that the only way they can win a game is to get out to a lead early and then just hang on for dear life because they don't have the offense to go blow for with people?
Well, right now, then I look back at 2016 when the Cowboys beat Detroit and they scored, led by Dak Prescott, 42 points.
Right.
You know, where has that gone? And I know, you know, the times have changed, and I think, you know, teams figure out a lot. And that's also another thing with Dak Prescott. A lot of teams, you know, they see a guy play a couple of years. They see the tendencies. They know what he's about. And you know, there's not this really urgency for the offensive coordinator to really kind of change things around, because that's what we see every week. We don't see, high tempo, helping the quarterback out. I always feel like if it's a defense, the start really sets the tone for the game, because you're out there and you're like, okay, what are they going to do? And then, yeah, I know it's some teams are, you know, they're going to go with 10 scripted plays or whatever their game plan is, but you kind of get an idea of what it kind of sets a tone for them and for you, kind of like how you're going to defend. Mm-hmm. And I look at, you know, Dak Prescott and, you know, the offense, again, the explosiveness. If they can get the running game on track, which I think they have a good chance this week against a team that's really not good against the run with Zeke, then now they can do some of the things. But they have to really just come out and just kind of like do the wow factor. Wow me. I'm a defensive coordinator. Matt Patricia, whatever, something he hasn't seen. And make them think, get the wheels spinning a little bit. Because to me, that's what you have to do. Because if you sit there like a sitting duck, which – some offensive coordinators, some offenses do, because they get a little stubborn, then you know what? You're going to be the same thing week in and week out. You have to be able to adjust. As simple as that sounds, you know, it's a big point for all these offenses, for any game plan, as you get prepared for that week.
Which do you think it is? Because there are only two, I should say, logical conclusions as to what Scott Linehan's doing. The one is that he's stubborn, to your point. That's one option, that maybe he's just that stubborn that he believes in his plan and he's going to – it's going to work. It's going to work at some point. It's all – you know, it just – that game, this happened, this game, that happened. It's going to work. I know it. That's option number one. But the option number two is that he's incapable. Is that option number two is that he sees something and he's just that wrong, that bad, that whatever, and he's actually incapable of overcoming it. Which do you think is more likely at this point?
I think it's a combination of both. And I'll give him this. He believes in his players, believes in the personnel. He believes in the people they drafted. And I don't know if it's something that he's going to admit. But they don't have the type of playmakers that they've had his last, what, four years as a play caller. So those things kind of change. Mm-hmm. You got to cater and alter it to what you have. And this is us outside looking in. You have to be able to find and sort those guys out, because there is an urgency, RJ. There is an urgency where Scott Linehan is feeling the heat, because if he continues to get in this methodical play calling where it's the same We see it all the time. Okay, first down, you know, first and 10, and then it's long. It's second and long, and then third down, and it's, you know, there's no urgency to create a big play. Then he's going to continue to hear this. And if there is not an increase in production yards and points, I don't see him lasting through this season. There's going to have to be a change.
Do you think, I mean, you know Jason Garrett, do you think that he's at that point? Or do you think perhaps Jason is, for lack of a better word, stubborn enough to go down with Scott Linehan again, out of loyalty or whatever?
It comes from the top. It comes from the head coach, and it comes from, you know, Scott Linehan being the offensive coordinator. He's already came out this week, and as we just discussed, and is behind his play caller. He believes in what they're doing. Now, when you if you go through the month of September, 1-3, then there's going to be some panic. Jerry, he's going to get a little anxious. Stephen Jones are going to get a little anxious. And all you can't blame it on guys that you don't have. You got to do it with guys that you have, not the ones that aren't there. Mm-hmm. And I really, you know, Travis Frederick is a tremendous player, but you're kind of, and it's just like Sean Lee last year when he was out. You know, the defense wasn't as good with Sean Lee. I understand that, but is a center? I think that's a position that can be replaced. It's a main ingredient, main cog for their offense, but it's not. They can generate positive plays in other areas.
Well, yeah,
where they can get away some of the weaknesses and create opportunities for their offense.
I mean, I know that this doesn't tell the whole story, but looking at it from a black and white perspective, yes, Travis Frederick's gone. Yes, Joe Looney's in for him, but Zeke is still tied for the NFL's lead in rushing yards. He's still averaging an insane level when it comes to yards per carry. I mean, he had almost 8 yards per carry in Seattle, for crying out loud. So while, yes, Travis Frederick's gone, and maybe he's not at all, or his absence isn't disrupting, you know, the run game, but it's certainly disrupting the passing game. But I would argue against that, because the passing game struggled last season when Travis Frederick was in there. It's not like you look at Dak Prescott's performances and you say, oh, here's where he dropped off, and that coincides with Travis Frederick's absence. Dak has been struggling for some time, and it feels like the Cowboys, Scott Linehan, Jason Garrett, Kellen Moore, are saying, dude, just do this. Keep doing what we're saying. But that's that definition of insanity thing. I mean, they're doing the same thing every week. And to your point, if they're 1-3 in September, the NFC East is moving on. The Redskins are on a bye this week. But, I mean, the NFC East and the rest of the conference are going to move along, and they're going to continue to falter. And they're going to I feel like it's one thing. I feel like there's a perception. And you're a former defensive player, so I don't mean this as a slight. But if you have a bad defense, I feel like people are more forgiving. You know, like if you're scoring a bunch of points, people just feel different if you're still losing. But if you're losing, you know, without any offense, then it feels more like you suck. Does that make sense? Or am I?
Well, the defense, that's a good point, because the defenses aren't – the offenses are a lot more – they're more explosive now. Mm-hmm. They throw the ball. The quarterbacks throw the ball a lot more. It's spread. You know, they do a lot of things to create opportunities for receivers, rub routes, line guys, up in a bunch formation. We have 3 receivers and try to confuse the defensive backs. I mean, it's all about let's get the ball out. Let's create as many plays as we can. So it's totally different than that. So you can probably hide your defense's deficiencies if you can score a lot of points. That's, we call that, that's your best defense is you can keep your offense on the field and generate points.
Right.
Now, on the flip side of that, if you're like Dallas and you struggle with that, the defense now is having to bail them out. But again, if you're averaging 13, just a really just depressing 13.7 points per game, that's very hard to overcome week in and week out.
Yeah, it feels like you drown more if your offense is bad. Like, it feels more like drowning versus if your defense is bad. It feels like maybe you're a capable swimmer. You're just, you're just up against
you
a threat or something.
I would at least think, and in the National Football League, I don't have the stat, but if you're right in the 300s, you're kind of be a total offense. You're probably going to be in the middle of the pack,
right?
In offenses in the National Football League, or in the high 300s, you're going to be more in the top 10. That's kind of the norm now. That's kind of the way the NFL offenses are now.
You know, there was a great article on Thursday at The Ringer, who are friends of SB Nation. Robert Mays wrote, I don't know if you had a chance to read it yet, Tony. I didn't send you this before we started, but it's basically like a long indictment. It's like this article showed up to the Cowboys' house like in a disguise, and then opened the door and was like, "Oh, you've been served." Like that's what the article felt like. And I'm gonna because you triggered my mind. There's a piece of it. Again, shout out to Robert Mays who wrote this. He wrote, "A horrifying percentage of the Cowboys' pass plays look like a variation of the same route combination. Three or four receivers, all of whom start in isolation on the outside, run to certain points downfield and turn around. That's it. Sometimes their depths are staggered. Sometimes they're not. There are no mesh designs. There are no rub routes. There are no bunch concepts." I mean, it's as vanilla gets. And I remember 2 years ago, I remember this stat just blew my mind. At one point throughout their rookie season, Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott's Cowboys offense had 8 consecutive games over 400 total yards. That is something that only the 2007 Patriots and 2013 Broncos have ever accomplished. They were literally the two greatest offenses to ever live. And so the fact that this nucleus of guys did that, and that now they look, you know, Jekyll and Hyde, you know, sort of different. I mean, I have to put all of that on coaching.
Well, I think that that's what we're going to have to get used to until there can be some versatility in their offense, until Dak Prescott is able to hit some big plays downfield. It's going to be every week. Everyone is going to game plan the Cowboys, and we all know what they're going to game plan, the defense. That's stop number 21. Let's put guys around there. And as you just mentioned about the, you know, guys in, you know, the scheme, mm-hmm. getting receivers, moving them around, wherever that may be, the speed, Deontay Thompson, we mentioned that earlier. He's probably the reason why he's still on the roster is because he's fast and he can create some space. Mm-hmm. We're not seeing any of that. Whether it's Tavon Austin, whoever it may be, there has got to be some creativity to get these guys down the field to draw attention. I don't care where it's coming from. I really think that you have to run, separate the field and separate defenders and get them on different levels. And that's going to be we're going to see that week in and week out until they figure that out. And the point what you're talking about when the Cowboys, you know, over 400 yards total offense, the big key to that is that the running game was clicking. They were getting third down and converting third downs. This team is is in the bottom last of the NFL in third down conversion. You have to be able to extend drives.
It's hard. Yeah, I'm a logical person. I'm a data driven person. I think everything should have an answer, and it's hard to answer why they insist on doing certain things. It's hard to answer why they're trying to do this, why they're trying to do that, why they're trying to force an issue. But to your point earlier, maybe it's stubbornness, maybe it's whatever. And it feels like the Cowboys aren't, you know, because we haven't even mentioned it, but because it feels like the Cowboys aren't playing the Lions this week. They're playing just reputation. They're playing pressure. They're playing, fighting off the house getting more on fire. I mean, for all intents and purposes, they're not playing the Lions. They're just playing themselves. And that's why I think a loss on Sunday is particularly damning, because it would really, really pull the rug out from under them.
I know, as a player and going through those tough seasons where you're looking at possibility of being 1-3, that is very hard to overcome. It's not the end of the season, but it's the quarter part of the season. You try to get into my whole evaluation. What I like that when you look at a team or where you're at is halfway point, 8 games, but all of a sudden you're 1-3 and you're looking at that schedule and you're thinking, you know, we got a very tough hill to climb if we have to continue to just develop ourselves. And I really, that's a problem. And that's a thing really that is perplexing for this team right now for me, is that we don't know what this team is on the offensive side of the ball, which it's just puzzling to look at the guys that they brought in. And we can blame it on Lenahan, Garrett, Dak, offense, but whatever that is, it has to come together real quick. this is kind of one of those do or die moments. And you, hey, you know, as a player, it attests who you are, and you hear that all the time. But the bottom line, there's got to be some passion. There's got to be some confidence on the offensive side of the ball. And games like this, if you look back and the Cowboys win this game, they're 2-2 and they go on a run, maybe this is the turning point for that.
Maybe it is.
Because it's a lot better. It's a lot easier. Look at the Lions. They're on the road and they're facing the same situation the Cowboys are. Mm-hmm. And it really doesn't – I always thought, well, being on the road, you know, there's pluses and minuses of that. But, you know, the Cowboys, again, it's kind of like Seattle last week. I thought all the pressure was on Seattle because it's their home opener, and they got an opportunity to go in 0-3, and they were able to beat the Cowboys. So I think there's a lot more pressure on the Dallas Cowboys in this game.
I want to touch on the pressure in a second, but something that you said that was interesting that you have experience with, what are the pluses to being on the road? Because I think when people hear that, they hear, oh, you're away from home, you're in a hotel, you don't have your normal food, you don't have your normal pillow, maybe you gotta use your shaving bag. What are the pluses for someone that's been there to being on the road? Obviously, the Cowboys are at home this week, but I'm curious.
You ever watch one of the Survivor? You ever watch the Naked and Afraid? I don't know if you've ever seen that, but maybe that's not a good analogy. So it's like a Survivor, but you're going with a group or you're a team, and you're supposed to live off, survive on whatever that's available.
Right.
Survive of the fittest. It's almost like the same thing, but you go on the road and you're together. You don't have to worry about any of the noise around you. There's not really any distractions because you're there. It's business. You're meetings. You go out to dinner. You go into meetings, and you don't have to. There's no family. There's no having to deal with tickets.
Right.
There's not all this intangible things that you have to deal with that people don't know when you're at home. Mm-hmm. And I always thought, especially on good teams, that can be a distraction because the more demand that you are, there seems to be this more distraction of people around you. But the big picture is that you're in a game where you have to win, so you're together. You know the meetings and everything else, and so I think there's more of a, I would say, you focus.
Right.
There's more focus. There's more that we're not at home and we're going in meetings and we're going to getting on the bus and then we're going to the stadium and we're getting in our element and we have to worry about that. And, you know, to me, I think on the road really shows a lot about a team. And I thought, for me, it's more the distraction. Like, look, guys, we're together. We're surviving. We're on this survival trip. We're going to survive. You know, here's where we stand right now. We have to really, really make something out of this. To really, really find who we are.
Right.
It's pretty simple. It really is.
I like
but
that.
There's a lot more. Pay attention to detail, the focus, lack of distractions, all those different things. I thought this is, and I'm not trying to interrupt you, RJ, but I thought the most interesting stories when I was a player is when we were going on a playoff run, and this was back in the 90s, and Jimmy was the king of making you feel guilty, and what's made him such a great coach, because we talked about he never made you comfortable. So we're getting ready for the playoffs, and he said everybody up after practice, and so he kind of senses everything. He's a smart coach that sense all this. Mm-hmm. So he asked the coaches, he gets everybody up and says, I just want to tell you guys one thing. He said, I'm tired of all these distractions. Your family, your wives, your girlfriends, you may have both, or families. You need to tell them to stay home until the end of the season. And we're like looking around like, the guy's serious. So the next day they came out in this montage in the Dallas Morning News, you know, when the Sunday paper was real prevalent. I mean,
right.
It was on the internet. And there was this expose about him and the strange relationship he had with all his family because he never talked to them till the offseason. But he was serious about that.
Wow.
But that's a little bit more exaggerated, but that is really the best part of being on the road, that you don't have to worry about any of that. You just worry about us. It's that point where you can be narcissistic about your team and about what you need to do and not worry about anything else around you.
That makes sense. I mean,
this is your job.
Yeah, it makes sense that it would force the issue because you would have other things stripped away from you. You know, you wouldn't, it's just, as you said, I think it forces you to focus. I think that's a really interesting story. I think I believe it, certainly.
True story. You can't make that one up. There's not too many stories that you can make up about those championship teams and Jimmy Johnson.
That's
when
true.
it comes to winning and being competitive.
I like that, and I think, you know, to that point, I remember in 2014 the Cowboys were perfect on the road, and I think that says a lot about them, that they were able to kind of just focus in on what the objective was, and you know, I like that, and I think that that's really good. I'm not a naked and afraid guy personally, but I am a Survivor.
Yeah,
fan.
That was probably the wrong comparison. But I do love that show. I love the extra large version, by the way.
So I mean, you know, whatever your cup of tea is, man, that's your cup of tea. So you can have Naked and Afraid. I like the actual Survivor show. It just premiered. If you want to go watch it, the first episode came out. It was pretty good. That's cool. That's a really cool
living on nuts and berries.
Yeah, that's that's kind of what the Cowboys offense is doing. I mean, you know, if we're being frank. So you touched on that, and I thought that was really interesting, but you mentioned Seattle. And when we talked about this last week on the 750, we used one word, that they were desperate. And I think, I've never been there. I know you have, but when you're in those situations, and I know certainly in 93 when you guys were 0-2, it has to feel like, you know, it's either kill or be killed sort of thing. It's not going to be us. It's not going to be us that falls to that record. And so I think that we saw that from the Seahawks last week. I think that we saw them play not with a sense of, oh, crap, this sucks, but with a sense of, this is going to happen because we are willing it to happen. And I don't sense that from the Cowboys right now. It seems like a little bit more of a you know, queasy feeling than it does. Because desperate sounds bad, but you can be confident if you're desperate. You know what I mean? You can be.
There's nothing wrong with being desperate. Desperate is desperate measures. And I don't know how other way you want to describe it. Desperate. We must win. You know, you hear that cliche, but it is what it is. And I can't say that, you know, I'm desperate. I mean, we need to win. If we want to go where we want to go, do we want to be 1-3? And to the point about Seattle, you know, getting it done, and Dallas hasn't, they need to be able to play a complete game. They need to be able to win. You know, two out of the three categories, offense, defense, and special teams, they have to win at least two of those categories, preferably offense. Mm-hmm. One of these days, there's going to be a day when this defense, they're not going to be able to live up to their bargain.
Totally.
Right?
Totally.
They're not going to be able to put up these numbers, and who knows? You know, Detroit coming in, they're the number one offense in the National Football League right now as far as passing. Okay?
Yeah. I agree.
That's a true test for their defense, for Detroit coming in. Now, they can't run the football as well, but they can definitely put the numbers up as far as passing yardage.
Totally agreed. I totally agree that right now we haven't seen they did against the Giants, but generally we haven't seen the Cowboys offense be able to win, and that's when the defense is affording them all these advantages. But to your point, that is going to happen in the NFL, whether you have the Jacksonville Jaguars defensive now, the, you know, whoever defensive, whenever. It is going to happen that they're going to have a bad day. And maybe it's not a bad day. They're going to have a bad quarter. They're going to have a bad series. They're going to have a bad something that's going to put you in a hole to the point that you have to carry the team. You have to be the reason why the Cowboys win. And for so long, the offense was, you know, before this season, you would have had to have searched forever to have found a game where the Cowboys defense won it. And now we're at that point. And maybe it's ironic that, you know, the pendulum has completely shifted to the other side. But the Cowboys offense, I mean, they beat the Giants in spite of the Cowboys offense, not because of them.
Well, it's a little weird to think that that's where we're at now. But we all wanted it this way. We wanted the defense to be better. We just didn't want the defense to be the offense.
Right.
We wanted the offense to continue to evolve and get better. And if you would have told me before the season that the defense is going to be bailing you this team out every game, I would have said,
yeah,
you're a liar. You're a liar, because I wouldn't have bought into that. We always said this, that our offense, we always wanted to make it a point where we didn't have to count on our offense to bail us out all the time, because they bailed us out. Some guy kept, you look at the teams that I was on, and the offense was really balanced. They ran the football, and they could run the clock out when you need to run the clock out. when you needed to like to, you know, a quick strike and score points fast, they're able to do that. But we always felt like we were the in that part. Mm-hmm. You know, we felt like that we were the weak link.
The little,
you know,
brother.
We played that way.
Yeah.
We played with a little chip on our shoulder because our offense was so good. Now, I'd much rather have the problem of our offense, as you just mentioned earlier in the show. I'd rather be the offense carrying the team.
Sure.
Because your defense is going to get better. They're going to make, they're going to create plays. An offense can't be clicking every game.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're in the height of the Tom Brady era or Aaron Rodgers. I mean, there's a time when, you know, that offense is not going to put up those big numbers. So it's kind of like, let's wait and see. So right now, in fourth game in the season, we are like getting impatient with the wait and see on the offensive side of the ball.
You know, I agree with you. I'm a big believer that football in general and football across the season is a game of breaks. You got to have the breaks. I don't mm-hmm. care what anybody says. You got to have them at some point in time. They've got to go your way. And I think you're more likely to get a break on defense than you are to get a break on offense. You're more likely to get a weird pass, tip pass, you know, fumble, something weird, than you know, that's way more likely to happen than you accidentally falling into the end zone on offense. You know what I mean? And so that's why I'd rather have the offense carry the team. I want to shift gears for a second. You know, again, the Lions are such a footnote this week, and it's weird because they are the opponent, but something really interesting I wrote about this week at BTB. So Pro Football Focus graded Byron Jones as the best cornerback in the NFL through 3 weeks. Awesome.
You guys having a hell of a year.
Yeah, great. Let's party. Let's buy his jersey. You know, I used to call him, by the way, he did not like this when I told him, but I'll tell you, I used to call him late night ice cream because his rookie year, he was really good at just like, you know, covering the opposing tight end. So my thought was like, the same way when you eat ice cream late at night, it destroys a good tight end, a different type of tight end. Byron Jones did that. And so I thought that was a great nickname, but I told him about it at training camp. He was not pleased. So I thought,
what's wrong with having late night ice cream?
I mean,
I love late night ice cream.
I'm just saying, you know, I don't find anything wrong with it, but.
So the earlier ice, the selection of ice cream is going to be a little bit different than the late. I get it.
It's
kind of like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. You stop on through, you know, a restaurant.
Yeah.
You may eat something that you may not eat when you're.
Yeah.
It's at 10 o'clock that night.
That's what I'm saying. You know, it seems like later in the night, gravity is stronger and it pulls the weight down and puts it in different places. but anyway, so Byron Jones, not late night ice cream, best corner in the NFL through 3 weeks. And what does that say about the Cowboys coaching staff? Because the Cowboys coaches said, you know what, this dude, he's a safety. We don't need to pick up his fifth-year option. We're fine on that. Chris Richard gets to town, takes one look at Byron Jones, says, whoa, 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 hold up. This guy belongs at cornerback. We need to pick up his fifth-year option, gets his hands on him for an offseason, a minicamp period, a training camp, and all of a sudden Byron Jones is a baller. So what does that say about the Cowboys coaching staff? I know Jason Garrett was asked specifically about this on Thursday and declined to answer. Shocker there. But does it say that a fresh set of eyes comes in, takes a look at Byron, and can immediately see something and make it happen in a different regard? Maybe they need that in a lot of ways, the way they did with Byron Jones.
If you want my immediate reaction, because I'm a little, I like to tap the brakes just a little bit. I don't like to get too crazy with, you know, it's a game of being judged and mm-hmm. judgmental, you know, opinions. But it tells me Chris Richard is a tremendous coach.
For sure.
I don't know him personally. I just know what he did at Seattle, his body of work, and just what people have said about him and his obviously his relationship so far in the season with his players. You know, Byron Jones is a tremendous example. You put a player, and maybe they need to see this more on the offensive side of the ball when it comes to the playmakers, but he's got the naked eye for, hey, look, this guy is more of a corner. He's more of a cover guy. He's not a center fielder. Mm-hmm. You know, you want your best athletic corner, you know, defensive backs on the edges. You don't want a guy. Yeah, you'd like to have a tremendous player. You'd like to have Earl Thomas back mm-hmm. in, you know, with the Cowboys. I don't think he'll ever. But you know, you want your best. You know, your players that can make plays on the edges mm-hmm. and not the center fielder. And to me, that tells me that Chris Richard looked at Byron Jones and says, "Yeah, you're gonna be my cover guy. We need you on, you know, playing man-to-man or whatever coverage it is. We need you out the edges covering some of the best receivers in the National Football League."
So do you think the offense could benefit from a naked eye? I mean, you know, maybe Scott Linehan is, you know, we've said the word naked a lot more than I thought we would. What with the naked and afraid left turn we took. But, you know,
whatever the dress down version you want to do as far as looking at someone and evaluating, I don't know how much leash there is for Scott Linehan, but this week, and again, I don't like for offensive coordinators to change just because they have to, because someone has pressure on them.
Yeah.
It's got to be within their realm of things. That's their type of play calling.
Yeah, it does.
There's a lot of different play callers in the National Football League that you know, you look at all these different high profile offenses that really like to get the ball out. Creativity. Scott Linehan just doesn't seem to be that. He wants to be a guy that has a player like Zeke Elliott that can carry it 30 times. If you're going to carry it 30 times, rush the football with him 30 times.
Mm-hmm.
Split him out. Do some things like that. But, you know, with what you have, the tools that you have in the toolbox, use them. You know, tighten different things or unscrew certain things and make it where everything is working properly.
Mm-hmm. You know, earlier this week, Michael Irvin, your former teammate, was on ESPN San Antonio. I do some work over there, and he said that this offense is a lot like y'all's. And I'm not trying to say y'all's offense was bad. I mean, y'all's offense speaks for itself, but y'all's offense might not necessarily be what it was today. You know what it was then, just because the league is different. To the Troy point we brought up earlier, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, do you see that? Do you see, as somebody who practiced against it, do you think that the current Cowboys are trying to be that offense, trying to be the offense that just grinds it out? Or is that just something that, you know, people are saying and might be a little bit wrong about?
I don't think anyone can replicate that offense. And nothing against, you know, what Michael Irvin, I mean, I respect his opinion, but I got to disagree with him on that, because it's totally, and he knows this, probably to his old admission, and maybe he wouldn't say it. I'm trying to think of where that's coming from, because yes, I get it. You have a good running back. You're supposed to have the best offensive line in the National Football League.
Yeah, it's easy to connect those dots. Sure.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, look at the production. Now, if you want to look at yardage, with what we did back then to now, we've made the point about Troy not being this throw for 400 yards per game, then maybe that. But we're talking 25 years, RJ.
But
you don't have to do that now.
Do you think
your balance is more out of attack and being able to throw the football downfield.
Right.
And you know, and there was times whenever Troy was able to throw the ball down the field to Alvin Harper or Michael Irvin or Jay Novacek. I mean, we had guys that could make plays. That's the difference, and that's where I disagree. They don't have those type of playmakers on their offense right now.
I completely
schematic-wise, maybe, yes. I would say that.
That's the question.
Being conservative, yes, yes.
So that's what I'm wondering. I agree that there's no way this offense is touching that offense, but do you think that they're trying to be that offense? That's, I think, maybe that was – I don't want to speak for Michael. Maybe that
well,
was
Jason Garrett, he played back on those teams. I don't think so, unless he wants to continue to keep his job, which if he wants to just look at that type of offense. And I'll go all the way back to Carolina where you look at Norv Turner. He's the offensive coordinator there.
Right.
And look at the offenses that he's ran through.
That's true.
He was the offensive coordinator, him and Ernie Zampezi.
Right.
But he's not running that type of offense in Carolina.
Yeah.
Because it's adapting to who he has on his team.
That's a good point.
He's changing his philosophy.
That's a great
point. That's
old
school.
Yeah.
You know?
You would think if there was somebody who was going to try to do that it would be Norv of all people, considering he's done it before.
Exactly.
I think it's at least fair to wonder or fair to ask, just because the Cowboys don't look to be a team offensively that is trying to do any of the futuristic things. They look like they're trying to be the 90s teams more than they're trying to be anything else. Yeah.
Well,
they have some cute little things. They had the Tavon pitch last week in Seattle, but it seems like that's them stepping out of their comfort zone. That's them saying, okay, you want us to be future? Okay, we'll run a jet sweep. There. Now we've been future enough. Now we're going to go back. We're going to run the ball up the middle. You know what I mean? And so I agree with you. They have to adapt, because whatever they're doing, whether they're trying to be the 90s Cowboys, the 70s Steelers, whoever, it's not working. And if they don't get it done against Detroit, this was a long week, and we're not even done with it, but this was a long week. And if they don't get it done against the Lions, and if they fall to 1-3, it is going to be, I don't want to say Armageddon. So like if Armageddon was the worst, I'll say Deep Impact, because Deep Impact was a different kind of movie. You know, it was still about the world ending and whatever, but it wasn't as bad as Armageddon.
I think it's going to be really, it's going to be tough. If they end up going 1-3 in the month of September, it's going to be the probably the biggest overreaction we've seen in some time because of what going into this season, going into how great Dak Prescott is supposed to be. And again, I said this last week on our podcast that we got a little seduced by what Dak Prescott was at that in 2016 when he came in as a rookie, than what he's really going to become because of what that great year. And now we've seen some things change, and you know, you get in the league, established, people look at you differently, they game plan, and all of a sudden you have to, you know, change. It's like all of a sudden we don't have the running game. We don't have one of our best, you know, offensive line. Now we got to figure out what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And it all comes down to the quarterback making plays, making those plays, making the throws. Whenever you need to be on point, when you need to be on target, you have got to make those plays. And again, we can't put all the blame on Dak, but look at the numbers. The numbers don't really lie that whole lot, a whole lot.
You know, it kind of seems like the Cowboys are at a place over the course of this ride with Dak and Zeke and Scott Linehan and Garrett where they did one thing really well, and they said, okay, we're going to do this until teams stop us. You know, because people say that all the time, and it's like, okay, well, now they've stopped you. You know, they have stopped what you did. You've got to do something different, and it remains to be seen whether they will or not. This is our second show of the week, Tony, and so this is when we do our predictions. I'll go first since you've gone first the last couple times, and that way I'll let you, you know, sort of walk us off. I'm going to be honest. I've picked the Cowboys since we've started this, and I was right against the Giants, although I feel like I kind of fell, you know, backwards into that, and goodness gracious, were we both wrong against the Seahawks. I'm going to pick the Lions. I don't – there's nothing to feel confident about for me with the Cowboys as much as it sucks to say. And so we're going to predict who's going to win. And a little sub-prediction like we always do. My sub-prediction is going to be that Theo Riddick has a screen pass that he takes at least 30 yards in the fourth quarter. That specific.
Well, I mean, I can't – I don't blame you for being a little pessimistic and not really believing in this offense. I think this game is one of those games that can really set them up to maybe get back on track, and that's winning. Mm-hmm. This is a game they really need to win. As we mentioned, you cannot fall to 1-3. That's you know, that would be a disaster, I would think, early on the season. In saying that, I really like what they do offensively, that being Detroit.
I was like, okay, who are we talking about?
Wait for it.
Nicely done.
Is the names you just mentioned, I think Golden Tate and, you know, some of the, you know, Marvin Jones. I mean, they have three guys. You look at, they all have multiple catches. Mm-hmm. And we all know the leading receiver for Dallas is Cole Beasley with 12. Well, I think Golden Tate or Marvin Jones, you look at the wide receivers, they're averaging 4 or 5 balls catches a game. Mm-hmm. And so you do the math. But I really like the matchup of the Lions, or excuse me, the Cowboys being able to run the football against this type of defense. Okay. As I mentioned, they can stop the pass, but let's face it, the Cowboys are going to go in with one thought and one thought only on offense, is to run the football with Zeke Elliott. He had one of his best games last week, got the ball 14 times, averaged 9 points and some change per yard. So I really think this sets up for their offense to say, look, this is what we're going to do. We're just going to – it's going to be one of those slobber knocking, knock down, drag out. We're going to run the football. You stop the ball. Mm-hmm. You stop us, run. So that's why I like the Cowboys. I think that there will be enough changes, enough creativity, I hope so, that we're talking about, where they will – you know, I'm not going to say they're going to score 28 points because you look at last week when Detroit beat the Patriots 26-10, they scored 26 points. Mm-hmm. And I think Stafford will turn the ball over. So with that long you know, segue into my who I'm going to pick.
Do it.
I'm going to pick the Cowboys to win 23-17.
Oh, so kind of close. You know, you won't all be right. able to, you can't go to get a beer in the fourth quarter. You got to stay watching the whole time.
It's going to be right on that cusp of, you know, they're going to be able to score more than 13 points. Are they going to be able to kick, you know, get to that 13 and then maybe score a touchdown until right now? But yeah, I'm going to pick them to win this one.
What's your sub prediction? I had the Theo Riddick 25 yard screenplay. What you got going on?
I'm going with Zeke. He rushes for 160 yards in this game.
$160.
$160. He's going to hang $160 on him.
Wow, I like this. I mean, last time we disagreed, the Cowboys won. So maybe that's what we got to do from now. I'm fine to fall on that grenade. I tell you what. I mean, I can't say it's impossible what you said, what you outlined. I think it makes sense. I do think that maybe it is a situation of we're just all in. You know what I mean? And you said you offered that they would be a little bit more creative, whatever. But I could also see that they're just saying, all right, screw it. All in. We're going. Hands in, all our chips. We're gonna give Zeke the ball 40 times. You know what I mean? And just ride that and hope that that's enough. I could see that. That would be fun. $160.
Well, and it's kind of like Detroit last week against the New England Patriots. Mm-hmm. They gave Kerryon Johnson the ball 30 times. He rushed for over 100 yards, which I believe that's in the last. It's been 4.5 years.
Yeah, since
or 30 games since the last time they had someone rush for over 100 yards. I did not know that.
Speaking of Lions running backs, what's it like to try to tackle Barry Sanders? Is it just terrible?
You know, do me a favor. If you want a big laugh, just Google Barry Sanders' best runs, and you probably know this. Look at you laughing.
I'm asking how I know it's hard.
Acting like, oh, you know, you're acting really naive and just really just not naive, but just innocent that you don't. You probably seen the play.
I'm just saying.
Where they shadow me when he runs by us.
It's got to be tough. I mean, that's all I'm saying. You know, is he the hardest guy you ever had to try and tackle? That's really where I was going with this.
Without a doubt.
That's awesome. I mean, not awesome, but it's a cool, like, legend. You know what I mean?
Well, he is, you know, to me, he is probably the greatest runner that's ever played the game. I mean, Emmitt's a tremendous player, but it's kind of like the guy, you know, the Kerryon Johnson, this kid, this rookie kid. I mean, Saquon Barkley. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I think that's the biggest comparison they have. But Barry Sanders would make his stop and start timing was just unbelievable. And again, if you really want to see someone look really stupid, just Google Barry Sanders' best runs, and you will see me highlighted, turning around, like what the hell just happened? And you know this, RJ. You already know that. Look at you're just laughing.
But you know what? Look, you can.
If you don't know it, I know after the show you're gonna like. Oh yeah, now I know what Casillas was talking about.
You know what? I would go through that 100 times to get 2 Super Bowl rings. You know what I mean? Like that's. I think you got. Hey, the
it
last
worked
slide.
Out. It worked out pretty good. I believe that was 1991. That was division playoff game, mm-hmm. and I think that's the last playoff game.
They won
Detroit. Yeah, that they won was back in 1991.
Yeah, that was not a good day, but some great days followed it. So that's really all that matters.
Barry Sanders, a tremendous, make you look stupid, all-time running back ever.
Well, let's hope that nobody makes the Cowboys look stupid on Sunday. Let's hope that you were right. Let's hope they get the win. And we'll be back next week for another episode of the 750. Tony, enjoy the Ryder Cup. Enjoy the Cowboys game. Just enjoy the weekend, man. I hope you have a good one.
You too, brother. As always, enjoy it.
This was the 750.
My name is Spencer Hall.
My name is Jason Kirk.
My name is Ryan Nanny.
And when we combine, we form
the Shutdown Fullcast.
Voltron!
I keep telling you, we're not Voltron.
The Shutdown Fullcast is technically a college football podcast, but it's also a show about
lawn care disasters,
regional grocery stores we love,
Tennessee Batman,
homeowners associations,
Bears in video games.
I mean, there's also some actual football discussion, like about coaches having huge contracts, or coaches making terrible decisions, or coaches saying really stupid things.
Or the NCAA saying really stupid things.
Yeah, there's lots of stupid things in this big, dumb, beautiful sport.
Sometimes we talk about football games.
Allegedly.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it deserves to be taken, come find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts like this one.
The Shutdown Fullcast.
It's not Voltron.